Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. We're going to be talking about studying abroad this hour of our program. A recent report looked at the number of students who are traveling around the world from the United States and also students from other parts of the world studying in the United States. The University of Wisconsin is in the top 10 of colleges that send students overseas to study. It's among the national leaders with 2,159 students studying outside the U.S. for academic credit in 2010 and 11, according to the 2012 Open Doors Report on International Education. And we're going to be looking at the importance and value of a global education and the international experience being a key component to student development, regardless of the career path. We have two guests with us this hour. Peggy Blumenthal is joining us. Peggy is senior counselor at the Institute of International Education, which is a private, not-for-profit organization with members in many offices around the globe. They're a world leader in academic exchange and the development of globally competent professionals and future leaders. She also served as assistant director of Stanford University's Overseas Studies and also coordinator of graduate services for the University of Hawaii's Center for Asian and Pacific Studies. Peggy, thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, it should be a great conversation. Susan Lochner is also joining us, assistant director of International Academic Programs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Susan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we should have great fun this hour. We're also asking you to share your study abroad experiences by calling us. Our number is 800-486-8655. You can also send an email at talk@wpr.org, post on Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We have so many things, so many ways to get hold of us, or tweet us at @KDunnShow. Let's start with you, Peggy. Why is it an important part of an educational experience to study in another land? What does it give the individual?
Well, I think that most people graduating from college today are going to have careers that one way or another involve dealing with another country. And it's terribly important to get that experience firsthand in an academic setting rather than to be out there for the first time experiencing all that culture shock and all that new knowledge when you're trying to negotiate a contract or close a deal. And the study abroad experience really makes students both more self-confident in their dealings internationally, but also with a lot more insight into how other people look at the United States.
Susan, what do you think?
I agree with what Peggy said. There are some traits that employers have commonly associated with employees who have studied abroad, and those include being resourceful, adaptable, independent, culturally aware, and able to think contextually. And I think that students can definitely learn those skills while studying abroad and articulate them well as a way to set themselves apart from other applicants in the job market.
Why is UW-Madison among the top 10 schools that send students abroad?
We really place an emphasis on having study abroad be as affordable as possible and having a wide range of offerings with many different durations and have programs that can articulate with students' academic, personal, and professional goals. And I think there's just been a longstanding appreciation of international on this campus as a whole as well.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the numbers, Peggy. 2010, according to a report, showed a growth of 1.3%. But you're saying that the numbers aren't growing fast enough, that we need, in order to internationalize the thinking of Americans, we need to, if we can't get them all abroad, we need to think of something else. But those numbers should be higher.
Exactly. And my institute has been producing this Open Doors report for over 50 years. And in the past, we saw faster growth. But this past year, the data is particularly low for just two reasons, along with the general problem of getting enough money to finance study abroad. Also, there have been steep drops in students to Mexico and Japan due to both the earthquake and tsunami in Japan and some security concerns in Mexico. So it would have been a little bit higher, but for that. But even still, the number of Americans who receive an opportunity to study abroad before they graduate in bachelor's programs is under 14% of the U.S. higher education population, and that's just not good enough because they really need universities like University of Wisconsin have made special efforts to make sure that it's an opportunity available to everyone. But not all universities and colleges are as successful as UMadison, mm-hmm. University of Wisconsin-Madison has been.
And where do you send students? Where are they going? And has there been a change over the years, Susan, as to where students are studying?
Yes, there definitely has been. We have 211 programs in 63 countries on every continent except Antarctica.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Yes, and we've actually seen a big increase in students going to non-traditional locations, Middle East, Africa, Asia, Latin America as well. So we have students all over the world at any given time.
And why are they going to non-traditional locations? And then the second question is, what are the traditional locations?
I think people are interested in seeing a bigger world, and especially after 9/11, actually, I saw an interest going to other places because I think people started to open their minds to different possibilities even. And I think there are other offerings in English in some of those countries, too, where they may not have been in the past, so that's opened up opportunities for people to really go experience other countries as well. The traditional locations are typically in Europe, the UK, Spain, Italy, and we definitely have a number of students going to those countries, but China is our third destination for a number of students, and we had a large number going to Ecuador as well this year, just as an example.
Mm-hmm. And are those countries pretty much true for other institutions? That's where they're going, Peggy?
Yes, absolutely. China has been in the top five host countries for several years now, and actually 14 of the top 25 destinations are now outside of Europe, which is quite wonderful. We're seeing large increases in numbers of students going to Costa Rica, going to South Korea, to Brazil, to India, as well as to China. And I think that, as Susan said, it's really an awareness by young people and by universities that our economic and diplomatic future is going to be tied to many, many other parts of the world, not just to Europe.
We also have a very large number of students from China studying in America, don't we?
Absolutely. It's the largest sending country in the world, and Chinese students represent almost 25% of all international students in the United States. Mm-hmm. But this isn't really too surprising when you think of the population of China and the very large number of students in China wanting to get a higher education and the limited capacity at home. So they're looking around the world for where else they can go, and America really is the destination of choice if mm-hmm. they can afford it.
Let's center for a few more moments on China. It's obviously a very, very different language. Are students prepared for learning Chinese before they go to China, or is this part of the international experience, Susan?
I think it can be both. We have a lot of students who are taking Chinese here, but one of our most popular programs actually is a program in Tianjin, China, in the summer, which is an 11-week program, where students are going to take intensive Chinese. And so they can get a full year's worth of Chinese in that summer. And then we see a lot of students go on that program multiple times so that they maybe go and do their first year Chinese, do second year here, and then go and do more advanced Chinese the next summer. And then we also have semester programs there as well, and students can sometimes go and be taking courses in English or be doing Chinese. But I think with support on site, students can definitely navigate the differences with culture.
Mm-hmm. Peggy, tell me about the length of time people go abroad. Is it usually for a year or a semester or a summer program?
Actually, the most popular time period is short term, which would be a summer or 8 weeks or less during the academic year. And over 50% of, almost 58% of students pick that very short term, which is understandable because they're trying to fit it into their academic program and sometimes they're working during the academic year. But mid-length programs would be the second most popular, which would be one semester or one or two quarters. Very few students are able to get away for a full academic year, although University of Wisconsin has been particularly effective, I think, in sending people both long-term and short-term. It really depends on the student's major, on the student's sort of family situation and work requirements, but we really encourage everyone to study abroad, even if it's just for 8 weeks or less. It really can be a mind-changing and life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm. Susan, talk about the length of time most students from Madison go.
The majority of our students actually do a semester, and then a short term is after that. And we're really proud that we're ranked 9th in total numbers, but we're ranked 6th in the country for the academic year or calendar year and 4th for semester preparation. So we offer all durations from spring break, winter break, summer, semester, and full year. But we're really excited to see our numbers holding steady with the longer durations.
Mm-hmm. And what about the majors? Do students fall into certain popular majors, or is it all over the board? Peggy?
Yes. Overall, the largest number of students who study abroad are in fields, social science fields, in business and management, and humanities, and fine arts. It's harder for students in the science and technology fields to get abroad, but there are a number of programs that are particularly designed to encourage them to go abroad. And again, I think Madison has made a special effort to encourage engineering students to go abroad, including through a consortium that IIE manages called the Global Engineering Education Exchange. And that, what for engineers particularly, they have to be sure that they can get credit for the work they do overseas, and sometimes special steps are needed, and consortia like ours are able to provide them.
And why wouldn't they be able to get credit? Very different programs?
Well, that's it. Engineering may not, they may not be taking the exact same course if they're in Germany or if they're in China or if they're in Singapore, but they're learning so much that's important that schools of engineering have to be a little bit flexible in terms of assessing whether or not they should get credit for that course, even if it doesn't follow the exact same curriculum.
Mm-hmm. How expensive is it to do one of these programs? Is money an issue for a lot of our students?
I think money is an issue, and Susan can talk a little bit about how they help in their campus, but I'd just like to say that there are a number of federal programs through which students can get support for study abroad, and the most popular is the Gilman Scholarships, which are for any student who's Pell Grant eligible or receives Pell Grants can also apply for top-up funding to study abroad through the Gilman Scholarships. We actually have a website called studyabroadfunding.org, and that lists all of the different programs nationally and locally that students can use to help support study abroad.
Mm-hmm. Susan?
Yeah, I agree. We look to have a wide range of program costs so that we try to hit costs that are similar to costs on campus with cost of attendance, and then there are some that will be more expensive based on various factors. But we always try to have a wide range of program costs available. Another nice thing is financial aid does apply for study abroad, and there are a number of scholarships available. So we actually have a graduate student in our office who's a scholarships coordinator who will meet with students to talk through different funding options. And through IAP, students received almost $1 million in scholarships last year.
Let's go to phone calls. We'll do that momentarily. We're particularly interested in hearing about your study abroad experience and what it's done to make you a better human being. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. It's not always rosy. There may have been some obstacles that you had to overcome as well. You can tell us about the entirety of your experience in a short period of time, please. We have two guests with us, Peggy Blumenthal, Senior Counselor for the Institute of International Education, and Susan Lochner, Assistant Director of International Academic Programs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. UW-Madison ranks among the national leaders in the number of students who are studying abroad. And the number went up a little bit last year, but Peggy thinks that there should be many more students, that the numbers aren't growing fast enough because we need to internationalize the thinking of Americans. To your phone calls momentarily, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour on the Ideas Network, Peggy Blumenthal, Senior Counselor for the Institute of International Education, a world leader in academic exchange and the development of globally competent professionals and future leaders. Susan Lochner is Assistant Director of International Academic Programs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and they have a huge program sending lots of students to various locations all over the world. Here's our number again, 800-486-8655. Darcy in Oshkosh, our first caller. Hi, Darcy.
Hi. Hi. I'd just like to share my experience. I was a junior in 1972 at the University of Michigan, and we had a joint program with the University of Wisconsin. We had 25 students from each school go to Aix-en-Provence in southern France, and I was there for the full academic year, and it was great. I still have a French friend that I met in classes, and we took classes both at the French University there and at the Institute for Strange Students or Foreign Students, and so it was great. We got to travel a lot. You learned how to use rail passes and budget and learned about our apartment. You know, we had a five girls sharing a shower, and they had these little itty-bitty water heaters, so, you know, after three showers, that was about as much hot water as you had. So, you know, back then you learned how the Europeans were much more into conservation and small cars, and it just was a growing experience. It was just one of the turning points in my life I look back on, and I made sure all three of my girls, I was lucky. Tuition back then, you just paid the regular tuition for your university, and then whatever travel, or there were a few extra expenses, but so it wasn't really outrageous to go then. And I know costs are a lot more right now, but and my three daughters have all studied abroad too.
Oh, and where did they go, Darcy?
My oldest daughter went to Paris through the University of Wisconsin for a semester about 2001.
Uh-huh.
And my middle daughter, she went to the University of Michigan, and she went to Italy on a summer program. She was in architecture, and that was fabulous for her. And then my youngest daughter went to actually Ghana and studied. She's a music teacher now, and she went to Ghana and studied African music there. So it's just, I would recommend any parent who can possibly have their kid go. It's just, it's phenomenal. And, you know, I learned how to speak fluent French by the time. You just have to.
Right.
I think a semester helps. My daughter, her French was a lot better when she got back. But when you're there a year, I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I go back now, and it just takes me about a day to get back into the swing of it. So.
Oh, Darcy, what a wholehearted endorsement. Peggy?
Yes, I think this is quite typical, actually, of the kind of experience. When you come back after a year, you really feel it has changed you in so many ways. So I'm thrilled that Dorothy passed it on to all of three daughters. And let me just say that funding today is pretty much the same situation. Normally, students will pay the same tuition that they pay at the home campus, and then there are extra costs of travel and so on. But as I said, this website, studyabroadfunding.org, that we manage really does give you some clues as to where else you can go to get supplementary funding. So it shouldn't, funding, we hope, would never stand in the way of somebody being able to have this wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Susan, are there still collaborations between universities for the kind of thing that Darcy was talking about between Michigan and Wisconsin?
There definitely are, yes, for some of our programs. And the Aix-en-Provence program that she was talking about just celebrated 50 years and still exists.
Oh, it does.
Yes.
Great. Thanks, Darcy, for the call. Eugene and Viola, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. I didn't study abroad. I taught abroad for 2 years for the Department of Defense Dependent Schools in Europe in the early 1980s, and I would highly recommend the program to anybody. The military was just plain good to us. We held military passports, and we were all over Europe for 2 years. And the students we had there in the school, they were military children, but a lot of them could speak two languages and sometimes three, and you'd be talking to a certain part of the world, and they'd sit there and tell you all about it. And Germany, it was just a very, very good country to work and teach in.
Peggy.
Yes, well, I think that's true, that really people, I think not just the students learn a tremendous amount, but teachers who go usually accompany the students. It changes the way that they teach as well, and I think it's so important. I should mention, when this mention of the military, there is also a wonderful scholarship program run with funding for people who want to go into careers either in the military or the diplomatic corps or national security, and it's called NSEP, the National Security Education Program, and you can find it on our website or its own website. It provides scholarships for undergraduates and graduate students who want to look at careers in the national security sector.
Let's talk just a little bit about the importance of knowing other languages. I still, to this day, am in awe of people who speak another language fluently, and some speak, you know, three or four. I think, how in the world can you do that? I just think it serves you well in this country. There are a lot of ways to find employment, I think, if you speak another language fluently. It's good for strengthening the mind. And it's one of those things that our moms probably told us to do in addition to learning how to type, which is forever wonderful advice. But we don't do much of that in this country, or maybe we're doing more of it. Are we, Peggy?
Well, you're absolutely right. It used to be actually required at many high schools and
yes.
certainly many colleges that you couldn't graduate without a second language. And unfortunately, that's kind of gone by the board in a lot of places. But around the world, everybody else is at an advantage over us because
right.
they all know their own language, and most of them also know English.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them know, as you say, two or three languages. So it really is important, and there's no easier way to learn a language than to study abroad. I mean, having studied Chinese and French as an undergraduate and never spoke a word until I was plunged into a study abroad environment, I know that just living abroad helps you become much more fluent and much more confident than you ever will be sitting in a language lab at home.
How true. You have to use it.
You have to use it to survive.
Right. Thanks, Eugene, so much for the call. Scott in La Crosse, hi.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hey, Scott.
I did not study abroad. However, I did my undergraduate work at the University of Colorado, and I know they do have an active study abroad program there. And later in life, I went on into the Peace Corps, and I'm still active with Return Peace Corps Volunteer Group in Wisconsin. And I can tell you that both the University of Colorado and the University of Wisconsin are usually right within 1, 2, 3 in Peace Corps recruitment annually of the rankings of universities across the country. So I guess my question for you folks is, do you see a correlation there? I think I do.
Susan.
I definitely do, and we have a strong relationship. We actually have a Peace Corps representative on campus who comes in and works with us and with students who are thinking about going abroad or return students, and we actually also have a number of Peace Corps volunteers, Return Peace Corps volunteers who work in our office as well.
Peggy?
Absolutely. I think that the kind of the courage it takes to go abroad in the Peace Corps is the same courage that it takes an undergraduate really to kind of dare to go out of their comfort zone and study abroad. Some of these students may never have left their home state before, and we're asking them to just have a leap of faith and go study somewhere else. And Peace Corps, of course, you're committing a whole year to going to a place that's a lot harder to navigate through than France or Germany. But it is the same kind of impulse, and I think it attracts the same kind of people.
Mm-hmm. People like you, Scott.
Well, you know, I've told you before when you celebrated the anniversary, I always tell people there's no better way to live in a country than to be there with a purpose and know the language and be part of the culture and the community. And if there's one thing we need in this country, in my humble opinion, that, exactly. So bless you folks for the work you're doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. Kate in Madison, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks so much for having me on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share my story. I went to Freiburg, Germany as a UW-Madison student. We took off September 1st, 2001. So I was actually it was German immersion program, so all of my coursework was in German. And but of the importance of the story is that I was there during September 11th.
Oh, my.
And so it was 10 days later and, you know, kind of going through. I was a sophomore in college. I was 19 years old and was with the program, and they did just an incredible job at walking. I remember walking to the grocery store, and there was a woman who had met a friend of mine, and I had gone to the dinner the night before, and she was crying and saying, in German, your Americans, come see what's happening. And there was this little TV in the back of the ice cream shop where I'm, you know, live watching all of this happen back at home. And I remember seeing the news kind of unfold. It was the afternoon for us, and seeing the news unfold in German throughout the afternoon and evening. And at one point, you know, seeing the five different buildings that were smoking and what's happening, and thinking, are we ever going to get back? You know, what's going to happen? And just uncertain being in a different place and not knowing. For a long time, it was probably at least a good month until things settled down.
Mm-hmm.
But then also the strangeness of being there the full year. I came back to July afterwards, and how I felt like I missed this entire chapter in American history, because it was, internationally, it was big news for about a week, I would say, and then everything went back to life as normal for folks abroad. but then hearing the reports of just what happened here and just having completely missed that, I wanted to share that story with you.
Thank you so much for the call. Peggy, would you like to respond?
I would. I think this is so interesting, and Susan had mentioned earlier as well that after September 11, one would have assumed that Americans would get more fearful about traveling abroad and more reluctant to kind of mix it up internationally. But in fact, just the opposite happened. We saw a tremendous growth of interest in trying to study in the Muslim world, and also trying to understand really how it is that other countries reacted to this, and how we're seen internationally, and I think the caller is quite right. It's very eye opening to be in another country and see America through their eyes, and it kind of changes the way you think about yourself and your role in the country. It makes many people actually more feel more American than they ever felt before when they're overseas. But it's true. September 11 was a turning point, and we were all of us worried that it would really turn America inward. But I think in study abroad, at least, it had just the opposite effect.
Yeah, it's true. For those of us who were in the media those days, we called on people who were Peace Corps volunteers in Afghanistan, and we were perhaps a little bit embarrassed, as we tend to be, that we're kind of chauvinistic and we didn't know a lot about Afghanistan or Saudi Arabia or all of those countries, the number of people, Americans, we had not as many people speaking some of those languages in the Mideast that we should, to be able to analyze what was happening. It really pointed to how valuable international education is, isn't it? And how we were maybe falling down on the job a little bit, Peggy.
Well, and we worried as well about whether international students would still feel welcome in the United States. And I think that actually was reflected in the numbers, that they did have a slight dip after September 11 because America tightened up some of its visa review policies and make sure that our borders were safe, which is absolutely job one. But also, the U.S. government came out very forcefully and said, equally important is keeping our doors open to international students, because particularly students from the Middle East and North Africa and the regions where the Islamic viewpoint is not well understood in the United States, and these students need to both be ambassadors,
yes,
to explain their country's views and also to understand America.
Yes. Thank you, Kate, so much for the call. Let's direct this one to you, Susan. It's an email from Bill. Hi, I spent a year in Nepal, early 80s, during the initial year of the UW program. We were the first undergrads ever given permission to stay 1 year. Still had to renew visas every few months. While I considered it not study abroad, but live abroad due to rudimentary academics, I wouldn't trade that experience for any before or since. Beautiful country, poverty-like conditions, the most uplifting people I have ever met.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the nice things when you're living somewhere for so long, is not only will you get the academics that will go into the transcript and things, but you're experiencing so many things from a cultural level, and you actually, if you spend a year especially, get to start seeing things from their perspective, as Peggy was saying, and really get to get a deeper understanding of people and why they approach things from different ways. And I think there are so many different parts that go in that are not able to be concretely said with a study abroad experience, but the skills that you gain and the experiences that you have, that they're exactly what he's saying. You know, it's the best year of your life. And I think people sometimes have a hard time putting that into words.
Joe in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Great program. I couldn't, I mean, as far as the idea of Americans both living and studying abroad, I can't think of a better thing for them to be doing. I think one of our difficulties is our isolationism in this country and our lack of knowledge of the outside world. I spent, I did my doctorate abroad, so I spent quite a number of years at Trinity College Dublin, and then for a number of years in London, came back here. And I guess my question is, when I was teaching here, we set up a program again in Europe where I was teaching, but it was completely within the context of another institution. In other words, my question is, and I sense that perhaps that is true of what people have been saying, that, people have the opportunity not to live in a bubble. In other words, a lot of universities in the United States do have programs abroad, But they're, you know, they tend, some of them at least, they tend to live with Americans, and as I say again, they tend to study and with Americans and don't have the opportunity to really get a chance to experience, you know, what others, you know, the foreign culture. So I'm just wondering, I guess that's my question of, you know, the participants, whether or not these programs are set up in that regard. In other words, whether they're in kind of American bubbles or whether they actually really get a chance to experience the foreign culture.
Yeah, it's a good question. Peggy?
Well, I think you're right that certainly the longer you can stay and the more you can be integrated into the host society, the more profound the learning is going to be. But I wouldn't underestimate the value of even going abroad in an all-American group that lives together and seems to be isolated, because for some students, their comfort level just is such that they would not feel comfortable being directly enrolled in a foreign institution, or they may not have the local language, or they may not be able to afford a program that's any more than just traveling with their faculty. I shouldn't say just, but traveling with a professor for 2 or 3 weeks with your classmates and just seeing and beginning to feel what it's like to be in a foreign setting. So I think there's a place for everybody, and programs run the gamut. I think there more and more are trying to do a kind of a deep immersion, as you described. But for some kids, even like community college kids who may only be able to get abroad for a week or two, traveling in what we might call a bubble, but for them is a very kind of safe environment with their professor, and coming right back and being able to directly apply that work in their home classroom is great and is mind-opening.
Thank you, Joe, so much for your call. Megan in Madison, hi.
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 Hi. I'm calling because I studied abroad in South Africa in 2003 from July until December, and I did not go along with any faculty. It was just me and three other Americans, and we were oriented with other international students, and I remember before we left, the faculty and at my undergrad had said to us, we really want you to get in, hang out and get involved with the South Africans. And I think they especially meant the black South Africans. But when I was there, I pretty much hung out with mostly international students. I did get to the townships, and I was able to volunteer there. It was a pretty cool experience. I took 4 classes while I was there, and they had nothing to do with anything that any credits that I actually needed.
Where did you go to undergraduate? Where did you get your undergraduate degree?
In St. Cloud, Minnesota, at St. Cloud State.
Uh-huh.
And there was actually another group over there there was a college in St. Joseph, Minnesota. They had sent some students over there with a professor, and I know that they had a very different experience than we did.
Mm-hmm.
But I rented a car when I was there. I traveled a lot. I was just basically able to do whatever. It felt like I was able to do whatever I wanted, and South Africa was very easy to. It kind of felt like I was living in the States, really. Until you entered the townships, then it was very, very different.
Hmm. It does sound, Megan, like you're an adventuresome soul.
Yes. I definitely felt like a free spirit when I was
right.
there.
Right. It sounds like, yeah. you want to comment on this, Susan?
Sure. I think, yes, there are a lot of different types of programs that are available. And like she was saying, she had a very different experience than others. And I think one of the things, even speaking to the other caller's comments and then hers, is that it's up to the student to decide how active they'll be and how they'll get out and get involved in the local community and do different things. And I think that can really enhance the experience that you're having.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, Peggy, it also points to there are some people who probably need a little bit more structure, that you need to investigate what program you're going to do. Not everybody is as brave as Megan.
It's absolutely right. And I think that the study abroad office on campus is your best friend in that regard, because they really know the whole range of programs that are available through their institution. There also is another website I wanted to recommend.
Sure.
which is called IIEPassport.org.
IIEPassport.org. Okay.
And that lists thousands of programs, all different kinds, you know, some that are very structured, some that are very independent, in every country in the world, practically, in it, and a range of prices and a range of time lengths. And I think that's, as you said, it's there are free spirits and brave folks like Megan who are willing to just go out and do it by themselves, and then there are other people who really do benefit from a little bit more structure.
Sure. Thank you, Megan, so much for your call. Terry in Madison is next. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Question. I'm going to be 60 sooner than later, and are there any kind of financial programs for studying abroad? I have a very small handful of classes I took years ago, which might not apply to anything. But is there any kind of assistance for doing that type of going back to school and traveling abroad at the same time? And I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks, Terry. Peggy?
Yeah. Well, again, I would look at studyabroadfunding.org because that website is not just for people who are traditionally aged students, but for students of all age, learners of all ages. And there are programs specifically aimed at the more senior learners among us. So yes, there's really something for everyone. Through a local college, you might be able to find support locally, or through this studyabroadfunding.org website.
We're talking about studying abroad this hour of the program. Recent report showing that there's been a small increase, probably not as many people studying abroad as both our guests would like to see. But one of the places, one of the schools in the country sending a number of students abroad is UW-Madison, in the top 10 colleges that send students overseas to study. We have two guests with us, Susan Lochner, Assistant Director of International Academic Programs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Peggy Blumenthal, Senior Counselor for the Institute of International Education, is a private not-for-profit organization with offices all over the world, a world leader in academic exchange and the development of globally competent professionals and future leaders. 800-486-8655 is the number to more of your calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to more phone calls. George is next. Hi, George.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just was going to call, and you were talking about foreign students, and our family has hosted 14 or 15 foreign students.
Oh, that's great.
The years,
that's great.
College and agricultural students, and we had the opportunity to go visit many of those in their home country, and it's just a wonderful experience for our family, and it also gave my children the opportunity to become foreign students and travel and see the world, and both of them and my son-in-law as well were all had wonderful experiences traveling and being foreign students and traveling abroad. And my son actually took his first job out of college was in Ghana after that. But it has made our family very much an international family with friends all over the world.
Oh,
and I
love
would highly
that.
Recommend it to anyone.
Yes, I'm so glad you called. Susan, isn't it great to have your house be a place where everybody in the world can come and stay?
It definitely is, and it extends your reach around the world, too. I've actually hosted some foreign students as well, and it's added so much to me, and I think they add so much to a U.S. campus as well for students.
And maybe I could just add, it's
yes.
Peggy.
Hi, Peggy.
Sometimes your situation is such that you can't actually bring someone to live in your family, but even just reaching out to an international student and inviting them for Thanksgiving or inviting them to come out for a day makes an enormous difference. We all know that when we travel abroad and get invited to someone's home, it just opens up a whole different kind of learning experience. So I urge your listeners, even if they can just reach out and invite someone over for dinner, that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, George, so much. Yuri in Janesville, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for having me on the show. I just wanted to say that kind of wanted to bring a different perspective to the conversation because I came to the United States at the age of 13 in 1988, actually November 28th, 1988, and learned language and got my undergraduate degree in musical composition of all things, and then got a master's degree in communication. And now I work as, many things, including court interpreter in Wisconsin and Northern Illinois. And, I got opportunity to get involved in my community, Janesville, served on city council, ran for assembly. And I just think that hopefully my other language or both of my languages, as well as music, which is kind of a language as well, bring some different perspective and value to my community, to me, to everything.
Oh, I'm so glad you called. Peggy.
Yeah, well, what more can I say? You said it exactly right.
I know.
You know, it's just every way you can enrich other people's experience by sharing some international perspectives is a good thing.
Well, thanks, Yuri, so much for your call. Dan in Wauwatosa, hi.
Good morning. I have an experience to share, and that's a son who graduated from Madison in 1992. He spent his junior year abroad in Freiburg, Germany. He returned to Germany in 1994, and he's lived there since then. Come back to the States several times, but he wound up getting a medical degree in Germany, and he's a doctor in Germany now, and has a German wife.
Oh,
so that's a different kind of a spin on foreign study, I guess.
Do you get to see him?
He does return. He's back this summer with his wife and her baby daughter, so we did get to see him. And my wife and I have been over there twice. We've been there twice, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In the 14, 16 years or so. Anyhow.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Susan.
Yeah, I just love hearing stories like that and seeing how it impacts families and people's personal lives, and that is just great. And the Freiburg program is another one that still exists and also celebrated 50 years. And so it's so fun to hear these stories from the callers who are calling in.
You're doing something right if these programs are around for 50 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Let's go to Jack in Madison. Hi, Jack.
Hi there. I wanted to bring up another option for folks interested in going abroad is the program I was on called the Japanese Exchange Teaching Program. I spent 3 years living in southern Japan by going through this program that's offered through the nearest Japanese consulate. And it was just a great experience. I got to teach in public schools. The program provides you with housing, so some of your anxieties are covered, and you learn the culture, meet a lot of great people in Japanese culture, and also through other communities that are there. I met people from Australia and all over the place. So it was a really wonderful place, and I think that folks should consider checking it out.
Thank you so much for the call. Tell me how difficult it is, both Peggy and Susan, starting with you, Peggy, to make the arrangements for students to study, particularly if you're opening up new countries. Do you have to deal with a lot of embassy officials or school officials? How hard a job is it to open this experience up to American students?
Well, I'm going to let Susan talk particularly about it from the university point of view, because that's a quite a different kind of issue and problem, although certainly University of Wisconsin has been very successful at it. I will just say that there's a lot of programs that are organized nationally for you, and that where the student or the applicant doesn't have to do a lot of the logistical work. And I wanted to particularly mention the Fulbright program.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that the Fulbright program is only for a very elite academic types, but in fact the Fulbright program is open to everybody at both graduating seniors and graduate students and faculty members. And the speaker who just called and mentioned that he had taught abroad in Japan reminded me that I ought to just say a word about the English teaching assistant part of the Fulbright program. Every year we send hundreds of young new graduates from U.S. colleges to teach English anywhere in the world where they might be interested, and they don't have to have a lot of experience in teaching English. They really serve more as a cultural ambassador, and all the arrangements are made for them, all the travel and the housing, and everything is all done through the embassies, our embassy abroad, or through the Fulbright commissions abroad. So it's really easy for to find a place to teach if you want to do that, and to get full support as you do it.
Susan.
There are various levels that you need to go through with different programs. So we work with a number of the organizations that Peggy referred to for some of our programs, and then sometimes we're working with local universities on site, and so then that's a lot easier. If we're doing what we would call like a study center or creating a UW program, for example, we have one in Varanasi, then we're working with local lawyers, we're working with local officials, and we're making sure that we have everything done correctly and that we're hiring people with the appropriate human resources codes, both for UW and for the local environment. So there's a wide range of what gets involved with each type of program.
Mm-hmm. Jack, thanks so much for your call. Margaret, is it Margaret?
Yes.
Hi, Margaret from Menominee. Hi.
I just, the international experience for our son changed his life. He went to Mexico through UW Stout program, and eventually ended up in going to Costa Rica and Mexico and studying there, and eventually went into the Peace Corps after graduating from Boulder, the University of Colorado, for 3 years in the Peace Corps. And they came back. He came back and got his master's at Madison, and he and his wife are now teaching international classes through Wildland Studies in South America.
Oh, my.
And what they're doing is taking students from all over the country and giving them an environmental experience that is unique to that country and understanding some of the issues, environmental issues from that country. And it's a very intense program. One of the concerns that I have is that when they take out lots of loans to go overseas, in this economy, it's difficult to pay it back. And I'm just saying that that's an issue when the international experience is marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, if they're taking out loans to do these, it's a challenge.
Susan, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, I definitely think finances is something that is probably the number one concern we hear about students. And we definitely don't want to see students, you know, going into a lot more debt to be going abroad. And so that's why I think it's really important to research different program types and offerings, because there are some that are going to be much less expensive and there will be some that are more expensive where you may need to take out those additional loans. When we talk with students, we always tell them, too, if they stay closer to their host city, they're probably going to get a richer cultural experience and they won't spend as much than the students who do the grand tour of Europe or go see all of Australia and New Zealand or things like that as well. So we talk through different strategies for budgeting when students are abroad as well.
Thank you so much for the call. Pat, we have about a minute left. Hi, Pat.
Oh, hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thank you. I'll try to make it quick. There are three points that I really want to make. First of all, I thought you had to be married and have, you know, 2.5 kids and a dog, but I was a single mother and I hosted students, and I learned so much more from them, and I got more from them than they got from me. And my third point is I just spent the month of September visiting my students and one who I hosted 20 years ago.
Oh.
And I spent a whole month in Europe just visiting them, and it was just the best time of my life. So I say do it.
I say do it. Thank you.
Don't hesitate. Just do it.
Thank you. Thanks
so
much. And it's nice to hear from so many listeners. There are a variety of ways to have this international experience, which is great. Peggy and Susan, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for giving this good airtime to all of these wonderful call-in people, because they tell the story better than we can.
Yeah, they're pretty excited about it. Thank you. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It was fun hearing everybody's stories.
It was fun, wasn't it? Peggy Blumenthal, Senior Counselor for the Institute of International Education. Susan Lochner is Assistant Director of the International Academic Programs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In case you missed most of our show, Madison continues to rank among the national leaders in the number of students who are studying abroad, long-standing programs going to various countries in the world. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program. Thanks for all of your calls. They were terrific. They always are, particularly this last hour. We'll be with you again on Monday for All Things Political, and we'll be talking about the Voting Rights Act as well. So please stay with us for that. Great conversations ahead and news ahead as well here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.